Good afternoon. House Education Finance Committee will come to order. All right, we've got a full agenda, so we'll get going. But before I turn to approval of the minutes, I wanted to recognize a group of students from a local school that's here. Mr. John McCall is here with some ninth graders from Venture Academy, a wonderful charter school that I've had the opportunity to tour. There they are. Wonderful students are having a great time, so they're really enjoying their visit to the Capitol. So we're glad you're here. Thank you so much. Great. So with that, Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I was just wondering if they've met the Northerners from Bemidji.
Oh, that's right. We have the I should have known the plaid vest give you away. Welcome to our friends from Bemidji. We're very glad to have you here at the Capitol today. It's always a fun day when Bemidji comes to visit. All right. So with that, Representative Poston, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, I have. So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Poston moves adoption of the minutes, approval of the minutes from February 28th. Any questions or discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are adopted. Thank you very much. All right. So our first item on the agenda is House File 631. And Representative Rarick and Representative Haley are here to present on their bill. And so I will go ahead and move that House File 631 be re-referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Economic Development. I believe that is the motion we're doing today. And so with that, your bill is formally before us. And you have an amendment or a delete-all, Representative Rarick?
Yes, Madam Chair, we have a DE4 amendment.
All right. So if it's all right with you, why don't we go ahead and add that, and then you can describe the bill as amended to us. So, members, with that, the motion or the question is on the DE4 amendment. Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor of the DE4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, DE4 amendments. All right, so Representative Rarick, why don't you go ahead and describe to us House File 631 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. As many of you know, one of the things that I've been focusing on in the legislature is trying to find ways to get some of our high school students aware of their different options in the trades and manufacturing and other alternative careers. And this bill is something that would really help us work towards that. Minnesota has a strong manufacturing community representing 14% of the state's GDP and 9% of the state's workforce. The skilled manufacturing workforce is aging, and manufacturers are not seeing enough young people coming into the industry. The manufacturing community is ready, willing, and able to help train the next generation of employees, but they need a better framework to help them provide work-based training to high school students. This bill helps build the framework for work-based training at the high school level. What we are doing in this bill is addressing the barriers faced by schools and employers who have tried to bring high school students into the workplace and builds upon best practices from other states like Wisconsin and Colorado that have robust youth apprenticeship programs. Our goal with this bill is to make sure that young people who are interested in manufacturing and engineering have the opportunity to learn on the job site while they are in high school. As VOTEC went away during the four-year college for all era, we lost a lot of young people who otherwise would be in the manufacturing, and schools have struggled to keep programs and build new programs. So now it's time to reinvigorate skills training programs at the high school level, and that's what this bill seeks to accomplish. Representative Haley has been working with me very closely. She has done a lot of this type of work in the Red Wing School District, so I'd like to turn it over to her to present the bill.
All right, welcome, Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Rarick, for inviting me to work with you on this important legislation. I will take you through the components of the bill, but before I do that, I'd like to just tell you why I'm passionate about this work. I spent a number of years in Red Wing trying to bring together our educational system and our manufacturers. It might be interesting to note that the river region, so Red Wing and Lake City and that part of our state, actually has the highest number of manufacturing businesses per capita of anywhere in the country. And as I sought to, again, connect education and industry, I started taking kids out to tour manufacturing sites. And more often than not, the plant managers or the CEOs will tell me, Barb, how do we get these kids in here so they really can know what we're about and get excited about these industries? And so we worked on a partnership we called Red Wing Works, and we tried to develop a long-term plan to do that, but we ran into some roadblocks, and a lot of those roadblocks are addressed in this bill. So as Representative Rarick said, this aims to remove those roadblocks and create a pathway to link education and industry and expose kids to these careers. So let me take you through the major components of the bill if I can. First of all, the bill establishes the Youth Skills Training Program as a part of the Department of Labor and Industry. Programs must include both classroom-based education as well as work-based education. Back in the day, and I'll age myself, what we used to call work-study programs. Programs must be a partnership, and this is really important. It's a partnership between local school districts and or post-secondary institutions, working with other nonprofit partners and local employers. Taking a cue from federal law, we've defined student learner. A student learner is any student age 16 and up who is in an academic program and in a work-based program. The reason this is so important is that under federal law, student learners can do on-the-job training that would otherwise be unavailable to them if they were under 18. Again, this is one of the major roadblocks that I ran into when we were trying to do the work in Red Wing. Students will be allowed to work on a job site doing certain activities, but they would be limited, of course, to anything that was considered hazardous. Students on the job site would be under the direct and close supervision of qualified and experienced personnel, and students would be paid wages in accordance with Minnesota wage laws. We will also direct the Department of Labor and Industry to work to define the occupations eligible for this program and also define the skill sets that are needed. DLI will provide technical assistance to the local partnerships, and they will also work with them to identify the paths towards registered apprenticeships in the and through the post-secondary system. In Subdivision 4 of the bill, we provide language related to the training agreement that both parties must sign. In Subdivision 5, it allows the Department of Labor to provide approvals needed for the student learners to work on the job site. In Subdivision 6, we will hold harmless the K-12 system so that when kids are leaving school to work in these partnerships, the school will not be impacted when kids, again, are not in the classroom. And you're all familiar with how that works with PSEO. In Subdivision 7, we allow but we do not dictate the school districts to grant credit. We firmly believe that this should be left up to local control and the local circumstances in the district. The same exists in Subdivision 8, where a post-secondary institution can award credit for the work and the skills accomplished. Subdivision 9 provides a link between CTE and Perkins programs. Many school districts use Perkins funding to promote programs like this, and we want to make sure that those parameters are still in place. Subdivision 11 calls out that we are not eliminating any existing programs. We're just allowing new ones to be developed. And in Subdivision 14, we establish some outcomes. We expect the students to graduate, and we also expect that they will receive a skill credential. Lastly, there's a grant appropriation in the bottom section of the bill, the last section of the bill. I think we have a few testifiers, but I'll turn it over to Representative Rarick to continue.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Representative Rarick.
We have some testifiers that we would like to bring forward at this time.
Very good. We have the testifiers come forward. All right, welcome. We're pleased to have you with us today. And if each of you would just introduce yourselves for the record before you provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. We look forward to your remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Patrick Walsh, High School Principal. Madam Chair, my name is Daryl Lundeen with Hutchinson High School. I'm a Tech Ed CTE teacher.
Welcome.
Over the last 4 years, we've been working to develop Tiger Path Academies as a function of Hutchinson Public Schools. 35% of the workforce in Hutchinson is manufacturing related, so this has been as much a school initiative as an economic imperative for the community.
At Hutchinson High School, we have one-third of our staff is allocated to elective areas, and most of that is CTE. We have 10 teachers in CTE areas. That's out of a grand total of 50-some, 55. We have 1.25 FTEs allocated to workforce partnerships. So we are really trying to foster these partnerships with our community and have been working to do so. One of the things that we have done is that we have over 100 students in introductory wood trades, over 100 students in welding 100 students in engineering and drafting. We have over 100 students in allied health classes and over 100 students in child development. So we've really structured our entire school to get kids, freshmen, by the way, into these pathway courses. What this creates is that at the end of their high school career, we also need opportunities for kids to be able to get into the community to start exercising these deep pathway connections that they're forcing from or getting from a young age. So I'm going to turn it over to Daryl Lundeen to talk about some of the ways in which we do those things.
Madam Chair, we are a school of 900 students, and we're trying to get students into internships or work-based learning through in their junior and senior year. By doing that, we've had our STREAM Academy, and you have one of these, I believe, at your chair there. And one of the STREAM Academy is one that I'm in, and what we have done is created this career path for students. So as freshmen, they'll take a career class with a teacher that's maybe in the human health services where I am. I'm in the technology, manufacturing, engineering. I'll take students that have an interest in that area. They'll come to me. I will look at careers with them. And then we make a career path with classes that they are going to use through their high school year that would benefit them to go through that career. So they are kind of listed in there, and some of the mechatronics engineering freshmen would take welding and drafting one. As a sophomore, they might look at taking engineering design technology one, electronics and robotics. Juniors would look at engineering design and technology two, take machine tool and robotics. And then in our senior year, we're looking at higher level courses again, and then there comes the internship or work-based learning. And then they can make that choice on from there to college of their choice.
One of the most difficult parts of the whole Tiger Path Academy process has been being able to get the manufacturers to say yes to these partnerships and mentorships because of insurance considerations, different types of dynamics that are associated with that. So invariably, we run into this roadblock where we have the kids, we have the workforce for the teachers, and in the end, it's like we're having trouble with the manufacturers saying yes to these types of things because of existing laws.
All right. Thank you both very much. One quick question, and I know we've got other testifiers coming up, but just either to you, Mr. Lundeen, or Mr. Walsh, the Tiger Path Academies, is that something unique to Hutchinson? That's something that you all developed?
Yes, it's a career academy. All of our students have chosen a Tiger Path in one of those four areas. One of the explicit things that we have done differently is that we are making sure that freshmen and sophomores have opportunities for hands-on things so they can get the depth. And now that they have that depth, what are we going to do with them at the end of the day other than to just say you're going to have to go to the post-secondary institutions to get advanced classes? We like to advertise the fact that we have more kids taking introductory courses in CTE than any public high school in America. And we're doing it well. We've eliminated requirements. We've minimized things to create more hands-on opportunities and more connections to the community.
And how long has your Tiger Path program been in place?
About 3 years, from basically pilot to now every kid next year that's graduating from Hutchinson High School will have designated and also taken hands-on opportunities in one of those four Tiger Path areas.
Excellent. Thank you. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you involve or in any way partner with any of the trade unions and their training facilities?
Mr. Walsh.
Representative, or Madam Chair, Representative, we have a different advisory groups that we're working with. In Hutchinson, our EDA, which is, you know, directly tied to our manufacturing groups. Miles Seppelt is probably the biggest champion of Tiger Path in our community. As far as the trades, we don't necessarily have any explicit relationship with them, but the EDA and the Hutchinson Chamber of Commerce are colleagues of ours, absolutely.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, just for clarification, Mr. Walsh, when you were talking about your greatest problem is to get manufacturers or people to say yes because of the difficulty that they have with insurance for the students, and did you say laws?
Again,
Mr.
I'm not...
Mr. Walsh.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe that there's something impeding manufacturers from saying yes. I don't necessarily know what it is. Insurance is definitely one of those things.
Okay, and costs, yes, and that, Madam Chair, that you don't have a definite outcomes kind of program plan that you present to the employers or the employing group for the safety of the student? Do you have expectations for the safety of the student that the volunteer
yes.
company has to work with the students? Is that in writing and that's agreed upon?
Yes,
or would you get more if there was a different plan?
Mr. Walsh.
Madam Chair, Representative, we do have all that in place. We have, in each of those academies, we have a workforce partnership person set up to create 40 to 50-hour mentorships or internships, paid or unpaid, supporting with high school credit. We have all of those things in place. We have a sign-up, a web sign-up. We are meeting with them. We are going to carry the burden of the school connection all the way through to the end of that partnership. So we believe we have everything from a school standpoint in place, the workforce types of things that they need to satisfy, CTE requirements, all of those things. We are still running into a problem as we still have to get the employers and the manufacturers to say yes to that type of thing.
And,
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, when they don't say yes, what kind of, do you have anything in writing that gives a reason why they didn't choose to participate?
Mr. Walsh.
Madam Chair, Representative, we do not have that process of what would, you know, of what that would be.
Okay.
Madam Chair. Representative, one thing we have run into, I've heard just verbal conversations with different companies that if the student's 18, they can come into the company, but that's the roadblock we've run into on a few situations, the age of 18.
Representative Murphy.
And Madam Chair, is that just then because they are not an adult? Under 18, they are not an adult, so they don't. So they have different labor practices to follow.
Mr. Lennon, actually, I think Representative Eric has something to contribute to this.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. You know, that is part of why we brought this bill forward. One of the things we said in the describing it, the defining a student learner is going to really help further identify and allow the 16 to 17 year old. And then as we address the safety issues, you know, we have a lot of OSHA requirements and everything that would also have to be in place. And to Representative Juergens' point, you know, we have some federal labor laws and things. Right now that keeps this from applying to construction trades. One of my goals is to work with our federal delegations to work on that so that some of those laws can maybe be tweaked so we can open this up as well to construction trades and things of that nature. So, but that's something that comes later. This bill is specifically working towards manufacturing because our current laws would allow us to get to there.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
Thank you. All right. I think we have a few other testifiers. So, please. Jessica Lippa, is it? From Anoka Hennepin and Jill Kellar from District 916. So welcome, and if each of you would just identify yourself for the record before you provide your remarks.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Jessica Lippa, and I'm the Career and Technical Education Director for Anoka Hennepin School District and the Director of the Secondary Technical Education Program, the STEP program in Anoka Hennepin.
I am Jill Stewart-Keller, the 916 Career and Technical Center Principal, representing the Northeast Metro Intermediate School District.
Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, our school district has five large schools, high schools, in addition to the STEP program in Anoka Hennepin School District, and we're struggling to get our students to consider careers in manufacturing. In our demographic area in our school district, manufacturing careers account for about 20% of our total jobs with an average wage of about $75,000. I'm fortunate to work in a school district that understands the critical need for a skilled workforce in these jobs. However, we're still struggling to get our students into these roles and into real-world experiences with our industry partners. Over the last 2 years, our district has collaborated with the Anoka Area Chamber of Commerce, the Anoka County Workforce Center, Minnesota Precision Manufacturing Association, and other business and industry representatives to form an advisory board to really tackle what our manufacturing career pathways will look like in Anoka Hennepin, so we're best preparing our students. As a result, we received guidance and support from everything from curriculum support to equipment needs and other needs, but one of the main things that keeps coming up is that internship experience. As a result of our meetings with our advisory board members, we've revitalized our internship experiences for students in manufacturing careers. We have a long-standing history of internship experiences for students in marketing and business careers, even health occupations, but manufacturing and other technical careers has always been a bit of a challenge. Students in these programs typically leave their school day a little bit early, and this is that, and they leave at the end of the student day to go off to work and work in business and industry. This is after, they're typically seniors, and this is after 4 years of relevant experience. Could be in machining, could be in welding. They may have gotten American Welding Society certifications, NIMS certifications, other various industry certifications that are relevant for their work experience. But they've experienced generally 4 years of a career pathway, and it's their senior year, and they're going off into internship experiences. In our example, our program is approved by the Minnesota Department of Education for work-based learning, which allows us the opportunity to coordinate our students. Being a program assures that our programs are supervised by a licensed work-based learning coordinator with knowledge in regards to OSHA, child labor laws, other safety and policies and rules and regulations, and all appropriate training plans and training agreements are in place. The students are coordinated, and we provide safety instruction and ongoing instruction as a school as well. However, even with all of that in place, one of our major challenges that we continue to face through this process is getting students under the age of 18 to utilize manufacturing equipment in these real-world settings. It could be a senior. In our case, we're allowing just our seniors to go, who is 17 years old, just a couple of months shy of being 18, but can't use manufacturing equipment. Much of the same types of machinery that, by the way, they've been using while they're at the high schools. Our program at the STEP program is attached to Anoka Technical College. Those students are on the same exact equipment as people from the community, as well as people who are attending Anoka Technical College. Yet when we put those students into the real world, they're not able to operate the manufacturing equipment. This can be frustrating not only for the students, but it's difficult for an employer to hire a 17-year-old that has limitations on what they can and cannot do while they're at work. And in some cases, they sometimes have to create jobs for the student until their 18th birthday, in which case, when one manufacturing said when the student can finally just push the button. As modern manufacturing equipment has changed, sometimes our students are still, like I said, they're getting training on equipment while in the schools, but they're not able to utilize that in the workplace. Many manufacturers really do understand the need to get our youth into these careers, and they'll continue to work with us, but it's been a difficult challenge. We know from working with our industry partners that our students and our workers are coming into the workforce with an incredible skills gap, and our school district is trying to support this for our high school students to prepare them for either post-secondary, perhaps an apprenticeship, or beyond in the workplace. We know that some of the best experiences are in the workforce, and we would encourage our students to enter into fields that might have been that may have this experience and get that experience while they're still in high school. So we have a great support of this bill, hoping that our students can be able to get through some of these and help us navigate through some of these challenges. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lipa. Ms. Keller.
Thank you. Again, my name is Jill Stewart Keller, and I'm the principal of the Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate School District. We serve 14 school districts in the Northeast Metro, from as far north as Forest Lake, as far south as Cottage Grove, as far west as New Brighton, as far east, well, that's Stillwater, so you get almost Wisconsin. As a program that exists, we serve potentially over 40,000 students in the Northeast Metro. So students electing to take our programming as a portion of their school day have the opportunity to participate in over 20 career and technical education preparation programs. And this bill excites us because not only in the manufacturing area, but it has the potential to grow to health sciences, to animal science, to engineering, to construction, where we're hearing a lot of demand, where we get phone calls in on a regular basis. We'd like to bring your students on. When will they be ready? We're really excited about the potential of this bill. More importantly, I want you to consider what the model of success is for our youth these days. We're coming out of a trend where a four-year college degree was considered a standard model of success. Our employers are speaking and actually just breathing down our necks for graduates that are responsible and interested in careers that are high wage and in high demand at this time. I'm proud to say that I, a resident of the Anoka Hennepin School District, and both of my children are pursuing programs at the Anoka STEP, and I just can't help but be excited about the opportunity that they could have to getting hands-on experiences in that program should this bill pass. In addition, working with the workforce centers in both Washington and Ramsey counties representing the geographic regions that we serve, there are employers that are sitting around the table just hoping for legislation like this to come forth so that we could potentially offer these opportunities to help lead them to fill those openings that they have at their in their businesses to help them continue to succeed and grow in our communities. And I guess other than that, the biggest hurdles in programs like mine that can offer potential work-based learning experiences for students is exactly those types of things. The child labor laws, the number of hurdles of things like transportation, as well as the kind of the child safety issues where employers come to us and say, we want this, but we need to wait until a student turns 18, which means our students are waiting until they're a senior to take our programs, where we'd love to get them as juniors and then offer them this work-based learning as a senior. Sometimes the best learning a student has is, I know I don't want to do that when I grow up. So we're giving them the opportunity not only to potentially learn that this is what I want to do and stay on, where the employer will provide the training, both in-house as well as in educational institutions in their communities, but also that students just might figure out that isn't what I want to do, and they do it at age 16, 17, and 18 instead of 21, 23, and 25. So it is definitely my pleasure to speak to you on behalf of the 40,000 students in the Northeast Metro, as well as a parent of a students in the Anoka Hennepin School District as well.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart Keller. We appreciate your testimony. And let's see, do we have one more testifier, Ms. Wallstein?
Madam Chair, members, Amy Wallstein, Government Relations for the Minnesota Precision Manufacturers Association. And I won't take up much time because there's a handout in your packets that kind of outlines why the manufacturing community is championing this bill this year. Manufacturers are ready, willing, and able to offer experiences to students. They want to say yes to the schools that are asking them to offer internships and mentorships and apprenticeships. What they need is a framework in place that allows them to offer those experiences to 16, 17-year-old students. So that's what we're seeking to accomplish with this bill. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Wallstein. All right, so we'll turn to member questions. Or do you have any other testifiers, Representative Rarick? Okay. We'll turn to member questions. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious about the financing on this bill. I know in Subdivision 6 it kind of talks about it, but can you tell me a little bit more about the money trail or how it follows students? I'm sorry, let me rephrase that question. Regarding like general revenue dollars or student the money appropriated for students, is the student counted through the school district as a full-time student? Does it compared to like post-secondary options, does the money go to the manufacturing company? Does it follow the student?
Representative Rarick.
Madam Chair, the money will stay with the school district.
Madam Chair, is the student then counted as whole, as a full-time student?
Representative Rarick.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, we made sure that the language stated that the school would not have any harm in its funding because of this program.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rarick, I'm unclear on the relationship with organized labor and their apprenticeship programs in this bill. Are they covered in Section 1 of the bill? They're not explicitly called out while other entities are. They're not here to testify, and yet they provide very rich, valuable apprenticeship programs. So can you help me understand the relationship?
Representative Barrett.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney. This was left a little bit open, for certain, like manufacturing, things like that. We did not specifically name the trades. A lot of their apprenticeship programs are specific to them, and we did not want to make this an apprenticeship program because that falls under a lot different guidelines. And so we're trying to keep this separate from apprenticeship. This is, like a youth skills, more like an internship than an apprenticeship. So we are hoping that eventually down the line construction could be included, and then maybe building trades could become a part of that to help team with their contractors, but that's not where we would be able to go at this time.
So. Representative Gabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Rarick.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rarick, and I like your bill. I think it's opening up some creative opportunities for young people that matches relevancy. We know the importance of relevancy in terms of motivating students, et cetera. Just a quick aside, I would encourage you to look at those apprenticeship programs. Particularly, I would encourage you to look at organized labor. They obviously have quite a bit of experience with younger folks. I know we're talking slightly different purposes and age groups, but there is, I think, a rich experience there that I think we would be well served to look at. My question, though, and a couple very quickly. One is, I'm just trying to understand the terms and the constructs on the lead all, on line 1.15. So this is describing local partnerships, and it lists a number of possibilities, and one of them is or individuals who have an agreement with one or more local employers to be responsible for implementing, coordinating a local youth skills training program. Paint a picture for me. Who are those? Who are these individuals? If you could just fill me in on what we're talking about here.
Representative Rarick.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, that would be applying to like somebody that would be a coordinator, kind of an in-between that would be working with the company and the school district to help find them. So we felt it was important to list that so that somebody could maybe help out the school board, like sit in that coordinator role. And I believe that's what is meant by that, an individual.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair and Representative Eric, we could take this offline too. I'm still kind of wrestling with what that exactly. It's easier for me to understand, you know, workforce development authorities, intermediate school districts, et cetera. I'm not quite sure in the real world who these folks are. But we can have that discussion later. And then on page 3, and we have Finance Committee, there's a 3.8 line, the commissioners shall maintain and annually update a list of occupations. Are we tasking the commission, the Department of Education to do something they're currently not doing? And what can you tell us about the capacity of the department to do this?
Representative Rick.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, this would be under the Department of Labor and Industry, not the Department of Education.
Thank you. So, okay.
Yeah. And so that would be kind of, I think they would be much more qualified in keeping up that list, and that's why we chose to use them for this.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, you've had a discussion with the Department of Labor relative to these tasks or responsibilities, and what are you hearing back from them in terms of their only has the capacity to do this with this particular demographic.
Representative Merrick.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, there have been discussions with them, and they are here today, so I don't know if they were planning on making any comments, but we've been working, Amy has been working with them as well.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we might want to ask them about that really quickly, but I do have one other question, and I'll...
Let's go to your next question, Representative Mariani, and then I would just invite if there's a representative of the Department of Labor and Industry here to come on down.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then, Representative Rarick, on 5.6, we have a reporting piece, and I think this is, you know, critically important. We've talked earlier in this committee about making sure that whatever we're investing in, we're learning from that, because sometimes that could lead to scale-up possibilities as well as, transformational practices, you know, for our educational delivery system. But one thing, and we can also continue this forward, that I want to encourage you to do as part of the reporting, is to consider adding reporting that speaks to the diversity of students that are being served. And obviously there's racial diversity, but there's also gender and, of course, geographic diversity, so rural, greater Minnesota, you know, Twin Cities, suburban. Actually, that's right, and I've structured bills in the past where we've also looked at levels of income. We sometimes do great programs, but they don't always reach everyone equitably. And so I think it's important for us to be thinking about equity consistently. So I would encourage you to do that, and be glad to work with you on language like that.
Representative Rarick.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I'm more than willing to work with you on that. And part of this, what I was hoping we'd be able to reach out with, too, I believe you were in the Ag Committee with us last year when the FFA group from Humboldt High School came in and how they spoke of the successes, and that's exactly the type of group we're hoping this will reach.
All right. Good suggestions. Welcome, and if you'd please just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Jessica Lumen. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. We've been working very closely with our manufacturing industry partners on several projects at our agency, starting with the Minnesota Pipeline Project, which is about dual training and helping get experiential learning for adults while they're both employed with employers and getting related instruction in order to continue to develop their skills. This type of a program is a natural progression from our work related to registered apprenticeship or the Registered Apprenticeship Agency, also the pipeline project with dual training. This is sort of the next step and the thing that we're really hearing from our employer partners about, which is how do we help provide experiential learning opportunities for young people in Minnesota high schools so that they can be ready for those next step careers. We feel very, very prepared, particularly in working with our partners on being able to work on this area with the manufacturing industry particularly. As this would expand, we would maybe need to have some other conversations about what occupations and expectations would look like and what the competencies around the training for young people would be. But we feel confident that we can start this program with the manufacturing industry.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Rarick, and maybe the Department of Labor, Ms.
Lumen.
Does this change the working day for the student learner? When does the student learner, what part of the day does the student learner go to work or go to intern or go to be mentored?
Representative Rarick.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe they would still be, this is not changing the same requirements that we have for any other job that they would have. There is the potential that by allowing this to have some credits that they would be able to get to a manufacturer site maybe during some of the school hours because that's when the manufacturer is open. But this could even be an after-school thing, but they would still be have the same restrictions for the number of hours they're allowed to work per week is my understanding.
So they represent Madam Chair, represent them, they wouldn't be working after 11 o'clock at night and before 5 o'clock in the morning on a school night. I have a bill, Representative. It's in another committee.
Representative Rarick.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, yeah, I believe, like I said, all the existing laws that are there preventing that would still apply and, you know, override. They would not be allowed to go beyond those under this program.
Ms. Lehman.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, we are also the Child Labor Enforcement Agency at the department. we wear many hats, and we're OSHA. So we're obviously very concerned about the welfare of children and ensuring that they're in safe work environments. And that's why we think a structured bill like this with programs around it that are really designed to be partnerships between the school, the student, and the employer are really the most protective for students. We don't anticipate that there would be any changes to the work hours or school hours unless that was really appropriate for that program and everybody in the school, particularly in the student, determined that that was true. And I think one of the most important things to keep in mind is that when we're administering the child labor law specifically, the standard in the statute is in the best interest of the child. And so we're always looking at what's in the best interest of the student in terms of their development.
Madam Chair, Representative Rarick, I feel much more comfortable after this testimony, so thank you very much.
Other questions? All right, seeing none, Representative Rarick, any final comments?
Madam Chair, nope. I think our testifiers said it best, so I would just ask for your support.
Thank you. Well, I like this bill. I like it a lot, and I want to congratulate you and Represent Haley. I see she had to leave to go to another committee, but for your work on it. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 631, as amended, be re-referred to Job Growth and Energy Affordability Committee. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Gets.
And your bill is on its way to Jobs.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. So, members, now we're going to hear two bills, both dealing with extended time revenue. And so I think Representative Mariani and I will both go to the testifier table. Testifiers are going to present on both bills, and I'll ask Representative Bennett to take the chair.
All right, thank you, Representative Loon and Representative Mariani. I'm looking forward to hearing this. Would you like to make the motion that House File 831 and House File 843 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further action later?
All right. That is a motion. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Loon moves that House. We're okay. All right. Go for it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, I'll kick off and just only speak very, very briefly and then turn it over to Representative Mariani. We're presenting together because our bills are very similar in scope, both dealing with extended time revenue. This is a program that I believe holds great promise for helping us to close the achievement gap. Whenever we talk about that problem, we know that it is both wide and deep, it's complex, and that one solution doesn't work for all kids, and one solution won't address the problem. But research and studies have shown that more time for children who are struggling, who need more help to be academically successful, is a strategy that has proven to work. And so I think that it is money and time well invested. So the bill that I've offered, House Bill 831, some years ago, the extended time formula, and if members want to refresh on that, I will ask Mr. Strom to go through it. But at one point, this was a category of funding, and it was tied to the general education formula. So as the formula would go up, so would extended time revenue. And it was separated from that some time ago, and so my bill would propose reattaching it, if you would, to the general education formula. And Representative Mariani, I'll let him explain the difference in his.
Okay. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to present with you on this. We are in agreement that time is a critically important factor. There are probably other factors as well, so I think you're correct. There's a complexity of issues that are challenges for our systems and for our students as well. But time, additional time, is an important factor, and so we've got, we've studied this issue for a long time to know that that's true. As Chair Loon shared, at one time we had extended time tied to the general education formula. So therefore, whenever we increase the formula allowance, you would have that extended time revenue component, occupy right along with that increase. We did freeze that back a few years ago when the state was struggling with financial issues related to a number of issues. We then increased it once since then, and Chair Loon, you were responsible as chair of the committee to make sure that happened, so that we're currently tying extended time to the 5,117 figure. That, however, is still $950 lower than if we had kept on the full tying to the formula. So my bill would tie the extended time revenue to the full amount of the general education formula, and of course that then links it to increases as the formula increases. It's a substantial figure. I think we do have distributed out the runs for FY18, which show an increase of a little over actually $11,796,000. So it's a big chunk, but it's a good investment, right? And so I think part of what we'll struggle with is, what do we want to do, how much we want to do, and how do we want to do that. One of the powerful things about extended time is that it allows us to not just have an educational experience, instructional experience for students that's out here, as valuable as that may be, separate from what's happening in their regular instructional environment, but to have it tied with your regular instructional environment. So there's advantages to that. We can reinforce, we can share information, we can track progress, we can build on and add new dimensions to what's happening in regular time, with the extended time. Madam Chair, we've got a couple of folks from a school district I represent in St. Paul that has high concentrations, as you know, of students living in poverty, English language learners, high mobility issues, homelessness issues. These students don't all start out in the same place as others. Frankly, I don't think any student starts out in the same place. But these students in particular are starting from a different place in which this extended time ability allows for some of the catch-up that we need to see for good educational outcomes. And so I'd like to ask some St. Paul folks, if that's okay, to come forward and share in particular the diversity, an example of the diversity of the models that St. Paul is using. So there's this flexibility issue with extended time, which is an attractive feature. And so that's Mr. Jack Peterson and then Principal Michael Culver, who's been here before, to share specifically what his school is doing relative to those diversity of models and what kind of outcomes he's seeing as a result of that.
Okay, thank you. The testifiers can make their way to the microphone. And whoever goes first, please introduce yourself for the record and say who you represent.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Peterson. I am the Executive Director for the Office of College and Career Readiness in St. Paul Public Schools. Okay, all right. So one of the unique things we've done in St. Paul Public Schools is within the Office of College and Career Readiness, which you heard about in the last testimony, we have aligned that with our ALC, our Area Learning Center, and alternative learning and alternative educational programs. And so what we found is there's a synergy between college and career readiness and alternative education. And so having it in one structure in the Office of College and Career Readiness has been beneficial. With extended time, we serve about 17,000 students annually. Currently, we are serving about 7,000 students in extended day through our kindergarten through eighth grade targeted services program. We also serve students in 10th, 11th, and 12th grade in our evening high school doing credit recovery during the school year. During the summer, we have a pretty robust summer term program. We serve about 10,000 students in that summer term program, kindergarten through 12th grade. One of the interesting features of the Graduation Incentives Act 124D.68 is that there are multiple criteria which qualify our young people for eligibility for extended time programs. And so a case in point would be we have 13,000 English learners in St. Paul Public Schools. Many students need a little extra time and an extra boost to get back on track and to catch up. And so I think criteria 7 or 8 of that act qualifies every English learner to be eligible for ALC-related services, and more specifically for extended time revenue. And so an example of how we've parlayed that into added academic opportunities for English learners is we have credit recovery for students in the summer, and a number of our English learners need that credit recovery at the high school level. And then we also created an English Learner Institute of 3 weeks in the second part of the summer, in which students get an opportunity to get an extra scoop of writing, financial literacy, and some mathematics. And we found that the 125 students that participated in that were able to demonstrate some gains during the school year. We are able to fund a number of programs through extended time revenue that we call applied academics, formerly known as enrichment. We have a mobile jazz project that we do with students, which allows them to engage in music and to engage in the academic learning and history of jazz as a genre and as a form. It's a beautiful concept. One of the things that we've done, I think, at the high school level that's been very important in summer is we've partnered with St. Paul College to offer credit recovery for incoming seniors and outgoing seniors on the St. Paul College campus. And we've done that for the last 3 summers. In those 3 summers, we've seen our summer graduation. We have an August graduation. Those students are a part of the 4-year grad cohort. We've seen a 30% increase in our graduation rates by having our outgoing seniors and incoming seniors do credit recovery on a college campus. And if I'm not mistaken, in the Minnesota state system, St. Paul College is one of the few institutions that's seen an uptick in their enrollment. So what we do is we partner with the credit recovery piece, and we also give students multiple exposures to a college environment. And what they find is that they really love being on a college campus, the vast majority of students. And so we have a number of those students who matriculate to St. Paul College. Another piece that I think is incredibly important is the partnership that we've had with Washington Technology Magnet School. And they have an extended time model which has proven to result in very high graduation rates. And I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Mike McCullough to talk a little bit about the Washington Technology Magnet Extended Time Program.
Thank you, Dr. McCullough.
Great.
Please introduce yourself.
Good, Madam Chair. My name is Dr. Mike McCullough. I'm the principal at Washington Technology Magnet School. I had the opportunity to appear before the committee a few weeks ago. Great news since then, right? Graduation rates are up across Minnesota. And specifically for me, they're up at Washington, and for our students and certainly our teachers and staff members. Our graduation rate that just came out for the 2016, our official rate, we have to wait till the official rate comes out in the winter and calculate things, is up to 93%, which is the highest of any comprehensive high school in the St. Paul Public Schools. And why is that? Obviously, we have a lot of kids that come to Washington that have a lot of struggles in learning. As a reminder, we're about 90% free and reduced lunch, about 90% kids of color. However, one of the key components of our success is this extended day program. And at Washington, all 2,100 students participate in the extended day program from the first day of school till the last day of school. Kind of our philosophy is we have kids that are looking for enrichment opportunities as well as they need academic support. So why do they leave school at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon? Right? Why do they go to places maybe where there aren't opportunities when we've got great opportunities we can provide them right at Washington? Again, we want all students to reach high standards. I don't think there's any disagreement. We want all students to reach high standards. But we know that different students need different amounts of support. Giving you a couple examples of how this extended day program works at Washington, and Mr. Peterson mentioned second language learners, and we're about 50 to 60% of our students speak a home language other than English. If you're coming in to a high school class and you speak a home language other than English, concepts like meiosis and mitosis and vocabulary intensive science and math concepts are very, very difficult, especially if English is your second language. But we're not going to water down the curriculum. We're not going to expose those students to less. We want they to take the same assessments, the same standards as everybody else in the state of Minnesota. So what we do is we provide them additional support. So for example, in biology or chemistry, in addition to the regular biology and chemistry class during the day that we teach, often co-taught between a science teacher and an ELL teacher, we'll give them an extra hour after school of biology or chemistry. Again, so you're kind of double dosing the students. And in order to do that, you need more time. You need extended time with these students because you can't take them out of a math class to give them double science class, right? You need more time in the school day. Another example is some of our mathematics classes, again at Washington, if you're not proficient in either reading or math, you have an extra quarter of either reading or math. During that extended time, we're able to teach in new and creative and dynamic ways, especially through the use of technology. I was just in a class yesterday after during our extended day, and they're doing this gamifying of geometry, right? So you get badges, and you're going on a geometry quest, right, where you are solving problems using geometry. Well, that's a total different way than many of us learn geometry, doing page 54 and then going to page 55 and doing some two-column proofs and trying to figure out geometric concepts. I mean, here you're actually engaging students. But again, you need that extended time. You need more time for students to attain the same standards. Another example is reading. Again, a lot of us have libraries at home, right? We read to our kids, you know, starting when they're very young, even before they go to school. A lot of our families don't have those picture books, don't have those libraries at home, don't have even the time or the access to public libraries in order to go and get books. And so by providing extra reading, not just time, but materials and support, and strategies from the same reading teachers that they have during the school day, it allows students to be even more successful. Extended time works, and Representative Loon mentioned some of the studies. I think we're all pretty familiar with the studies on an effective extended day program or extended time, where it's a balance not only of just more academics, but you can see on the back page of our handout, we offer some pretty creative and dynamic enrichment opportunities for students. Just this last Saturday, we hosted the state Lego robotics tournament, and Washington was a part of that, as well as teams from across the state of Minnesota, but and a number of different athletic opportunities for students. So it has to be a balanced system. So it can't just be more math problems are going to have you better at math. It has to be a balanced system, as well as providing a number of different opportunities, enrichment opportunities, academic enrichment opportunities. For example, we offer some of our College in the Schools class, like our College in the Schools introductory writing class. During the 5-10 class, we have a St. Paul College nutrition class where we teach that during the 5-10 class. 5-10 is what we call our extended day class. So there's a lot of different opportunities for kids. We know that extended time works, not just from the research and from reading studies, but you've seen people come to you, to the committee here, as well as your visits right here in the metro area. Private schools, right, such as Crystal Ray in Minneapolis, right, they deal with a very diverse student population. They're a private school. They're very different from Washington, but they have an extended day program, and that works for them. They're a very successful school. Public charter schools like Harvest Prep Academy in Minneapolis do exceptionally well with students. And again, they have an extended day and an extended year program. And schools like Washington that have an extended day program that are a public school that's part of a public school district. So again, it doesn't matter what the format is, whether it's private, charter, or public schools, extended day works and is shown to be very successful. So with that.
Thank you. And Ms. Dopp?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairperson. My name's Lee Dahl, and I'm with the Intermediate District 287, and I bring a different perspective regarding extended year revenue, but it's also equally important across the people that I serve. 287 is a collaborative of 12 school districts in the western Hennepin County area, Eden Prairie, Osseo, Hopkins, Robbinsdale, Wayzata, to name a few. We largely work with special ed programs and alternative ed programs, but current tech and gifted too. But the part that I've worked with for the last 30 years is to be a teacher, TOSA administrator, in helping at-risk students graduate from high school, and that goes K through 12. I'm here today to talk about considering raising the extended year rate to the gen ed rate because we're struggling with the finances, and yet we know we have students who need these extra services. I specifically work with our targeted service programs and our credit recovery. Targeted services, just to quickly bring you up to speed, are for K-8 students. They're judged by somebody at their school district that they're at risk of not graduating from high school, and this extra time really works for them. We work, of course, in coordination with MDE, and to serve these students, we need to have, you know, limited class sizes. The recommendation from MDE is 12 to 15. We need to have curriculum that's different than what was offered during the school day. The thought is that it shouldn't be more of the same. It should be something creative and with some different ideas and ways of delivery. It's not homework help. We have to be real careful about that. It's a challenge for transportation almost always because families, or most districts have after-school buses, many do at least, but the ones that don't, if the families have to be responsible for the transportation, often students are losing out on the opportunity to stay after and to access or in the summer. So we struggle with this a little bit, and we believe that the extended time does really help the students to get back on track and catch up to their peers. And in fact, extended year funding was positively reviewed and cited in a 2010 Minnesota legislative audit. So I think that's worth looking at if you have a chance, too, to show that not only did they think it was a good idea for the kids that were at risk, but it would be a good idea for all students if we had the funding to get the extra time on task and learn extracurricular kinds of supports through the supports. We also work at 287 with our 12 school districts. With credit recovery, as John mentioned, and students who come to us are generally quite far behind in their credit plans, and we're always trying to figure out new and creative ways to offer the curriculum. And to those that are pretty chronically behind, one of the terms MDE is using now is braided curriculum, so we're trying to explore that and fund and support teachers to come with different ideas, again, to get engaging opportunities for students, including project-based learning. It would be great if we had a little extra funding so we could hire EAs to help support the credit completion as well. And ultimately, this will all equal out into a greater graduation rate. I had about a day or so to prepare here because it kind of came up fast. But what I did do was call some of our member districts, Eden Prairie, Orono, St. Louis Park, and Wetumpka, and said, were this funding to go through, and, you know, we're really hoping it will, but if it were, what would it mean for you? What would you do with it? And I got the responses that were we would spend more time with students. We would have more opportunities for field trips. Transportation, of course, comes up a lot. We'd have better supports for our special needs kids who don't qualify for ESY, so the kids that are kind of in the middle, that don't really fit in reg ed but really don't get the SPED services. We would offer more authentic project-based learning opportunities. And one person said, I'd build up my arsenal of materials, which I think we can say arsenal, I'm not sure. Anyway, they would also increase the STEM opportunities. Purchase more curriculum, you know, that kind of thing. But just make it richer, again, more engaging, and trying to get kids, especially at the younger age, to get back on track on the same level as their peers and not let them drop out of school. So I thank you for listening to me, and I hope you'll consider support equalizing the extended time revenue to the daily funding amount. The clock certainly doesn't dictate whether expenses go up or, you know, whether they decrease because it's a little later in the day or in the summer, and we're struggling with that. So I appreciate it. On behalf of MAP, which is the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs and Intermediate 287, thanks for your support.
Hey, thank you to all three of our testifiers. Anybody else who'd like to testify on either of these bills? No? Seeing none, any questions from committee members? Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Both of the bills start with a school districts. Does the bill then also fully include charter schools?
Madam Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Slocum. I don't believe Representative Mariani's bill does. I know mine doesn't, but we do have separate legislation being introduced on the charter schools.
Representative Mariani, did you need to add anything to that? Or?
Madam Chair, Representative Slocum, no, it's not explicitly delineated here. No.
Yeah. Madam Chair, may I say something?
Yeah, go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Slocum. In St. Paul Public Schools, we believe all children have a right to access extended time. And so we take very seriously the language that's in Minnesota statute regarding, I'm not sure what the subdivision is, but it obligates a public school district to offer services through extended time to charters and non-public school students. And so we do serve currently 500 students attending charter schools in our extended day program. And in the summertime, we serve upwards of 1,300 students who attend charters and non-publics in our summer term programming. What we find is that young people need extra time, whether it's, bless you, whether it's recovering credits in an English class that they may not have done as well as they could have as a freshman, or whether it's recovering a political science course as a senior. We do open it up to our charter school students, and we regularly meet with charter schools in St. Paul Public Schools and invite them to talk about what their needs are and how we can set collaborative goals and targets that will benefit all the children of St. Paul.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I was reminded that currently we're doing 25% of the state average with charter schools. And because my bill ties it to the formula, that'll go up along with that. So it's not explicitly here. We already have an existing 25%. application to charter schools.
Thank you. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But comparatively speaking, the charter schools get shorted. But it looks like in St. Paul, John, I always knew I really liked you. We talked together at Field. We were buddies. We plotted education issues. And then, unfortunately, he drank the administrative Kool-Aid. And but he still likes to have fun. I applaud St. Paul for the reach out, because I also believe that every child deserves a good, equal education. And it sounds like St. Paul's doing that fairly well. And I really would encourage, I think to limit the charters to 25% is short-sighted, or whatever it is this year. It's the new percentage, but it's still under equity with traditional districts, and I find that it's shorting kids, and I don't find that particularly fair. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could just
Yeah, Madam Chair.
and Madam Chair, and to Representative Slocum, to the members of the committee, I know I feel very strongly about the importance of extended time, and that was one of the reasons, you know, charter schools were not eligible for any extended time revenue. It's a provision that I insisted was in the budget bill we did last biennium. We had to start it out at a phase-in process, but it is something that I'm committed to, and to getting charter schools to parity on extended time. I just feel it's one of the very demonstrated data proven research driven strategies for helping to close the achievement gap, and it's something that I think we need to do.
Madam Chair, if I could just make one more comment. Madam Chair, Representative Slocum. So one of the benefits of having a collaboration and a partnership across the public school district the size of St. Paul Public Schools with the charter is that if we go into the relationship in a good faith way and we talk to the charters in terms of what are your needs and how can we provide services that meet your needs within the parameters that we set for our own students in St. Paul Public Schools, we usually arrive at a place where the charters feel like they're benefiting because they're able to leverage the economies of scale that exist in a much larger organization and district. And so they don't have to take on a lot of those overhead costs that are associated with, like, human resources and payroll and all that sort of thing. And so there are some indirect benefits to smaller public charters partnering with a larger school district. And so we try and structure it in a way that is mutually beneficial for both parties.
Thank you. All right. Would either of the authors like to offer final comments? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. I'd like to thank both authors for bringing this forward. I think, Chair Loon, you're spot on in terms of the ability to use extended time as a key strategy for closing the achievement gap. Minneapolis uses it a little differently than generally has been described here. Excuse me. They do use it for credit recovery. As a MPS parent, I'm now getting emails about Spring Break Academy, where they will be hosting classes over spring break to help kids recover those credits. They do Winter Break Academy as well. But they also use it in a preventive fashion. They invite ninth graders or rising ninth graders to their Fast Track Scholars program in the summer between eighth and ninth grade, provide them with several weeks of high school level classwork, an opportunity to get comfortable in a high school, which is actually pretty important, and with an eighth grader this year who's looking at ninth grade, a real challenge for some kids, but also give them a chance to understand and experience high school work. That program is 4 years old, so the first pioneers in the Fast Track Scholar program are high school seniors, so we don't know what the graduation rate is, but we do know that they have a higher attendance rate than their non-Fast Track Scholar peers, and we do know that attendance is pretty closely tied to graduation. To bridge from yesterday's hearing to today's and to the principal's
testimony. They do, Minneapolis also uses it for their STEM program, their GEMS and GUIDES program, which did put a good half dozen teams at Washington Technology on Saturday for the LEGO Robotics Tournament, including the first all-African-American team from North Minneapolis, which was a great breakthrough for those kids in that school. And Washington has been the host for the LEGO Robotics State Tournament for, I think, about 7 years now, and is much appreciated for your welcoming that program to that school each year. So this can be used both to help on the credit recovery. It can also be used to help prevent the need for credit recovery, as well as provide the enhanced educational opportunities. So thank you very much to the both of you for this bill.
Thank you. And before we have closing comments, we have one more testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't in the room when you asked, and somebody caught me out in the hall. But my name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I want to weigh in support of both of these bills. We have two standing policy positions on extended time. The first is to roll it into the formula, and the other is to inflate it to match inflation. And then I would like to also just point out that I was listening to Representative Loon's comments on using extended time to close the achievement gap as a tried and true policy. And I would just like to remind people that in 2010, the legislative auditor did a report on alternative education programs. And one of their key findings was that when they measured growth on standardized tests between 2008 and 2009, students in kindergarten through grade 8 who attended extended time programs called targeted services generally increased their test scores more than other students, in contrast to other groups of students. And so in actuality, then, one of their key recommendations was that the Minnesota legislature should allow all school districts to offer targeted services or extended day, regardless of whether they provide other programs. So I just wanted to point that out. I think it's always nice to use our legislative auditor's nonpartisan advice whenever we can. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. All right. Now, any other questions? Looks like no. So closing final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I didn't know if the committee was interested, but Representative Mariani and I thought it might be a good idea just to have Mr. Strom walk through the differences, or maybe just, you know, a little bit of a primer on extended time and what it could be used for.
Hey, Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, committee members, there's a printout in your packets, and I apologize, the last column got a little wide at the very last second before I hit print, so it wrapped over to a following set of pages. What this printout shows is how extended time revenue is currently calculated. It's based on the $5,117 per extended time pupil unit. And as you know, the pupil units are limited to at most point two, the difference between 1.0 and 1.2. So the first column shows the ordinary pupil count in the school district. The second count, then, that totals 12,227, shows the pupil units for each district, but because they're limited to no more than the 0.2, it would take five students participating to make 1.0 pupil units. We don't have student counts on the data that's readily available to me, but we know that at least five times more than the number that shows up in that column is the number of kids involved in those programs. So, for example, the very first district on the list, the Aiken School District, while they show four pupil units, the maximum per individual child could be the 0.2. And so so you can do the math there to see how many pupil units there'd be. The next column, then, is that revenue column. And under current law, it's fixed. It's simply that pupil count times $5,117. Representative Mariani's bill would add the $950 to that amount and then connect it to the basic formula allowance, and that's what's shown in the last column, how much that would be just for the $950 part, the $11.7 million number. And then both bills would, as the bill advances into the future, if the basic formula allowance were increased, both bills would then automatically increase extended time so that it would keep up with changes in the basic revenue amount. And those, of course, would be conditioned on whatever that increase were. So, for example, if the governor's recommendation for a 2% increase were to go into place, the middle column, the extended time revenue column, would go up by that same 2%. And so you could just take that number, the 2% times each of those amounts to figure out the relative impact on each district. One final set of comments that don't relate directly to the design of the funding, but due to the programs, there's a variety of terminologies that are used, and sometimes you as legislators will get questions about why some programs count for services and others don't. And this in part gets into the difference between an area learning center, which is called an ALC often, or an alternative learning program, the ALP, and whether or not they're offering targeted services. So just be aware that those structural differences can mean that for some activities they may count in one setting as extended time, but in a different setting would not count. So, Madam Chair, members, that's a very quick summary of the printout you have in front of you.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Any questions about Mr. Strom's comments? All right. Are any others? Seeing none, now we'll do our final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, committee members. Again, I appreciate your interest in this, and again, obviously, we don't have targets yet. We don't know exactly what our budget may look like, but this has been a priority of trying to increase available funds for extended time revenue. I love the programs that have been described. We've been to visit to Washington Technology School, and I think their extended time program is wonderful, and the ability for all of the students to take advantage of it. And it's not just, again, as sort of the drilling on math problems. There's a tremendous amount of enrichment activity that really adds to each student's educational experience there. It's something I'd love to be able to do for all of the kids who need it. So I just appreciate your attention and interest in this in these bills.
Okay. Representative Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, members, so we have something before us that we can feel strongly confident is effective. And so let's all of us on both sides of the aisle work on our leadership to impress upon them that a good target will give us the ability to make some very good and meaningful investments that will make a difference in the state of Minnesota. I look forward to working with all of you. With you, Madam Chair, to see what we can do with the targets, well, influencing the targets, and then what we can do once those are out. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, both of you, for presenting these good bills. So I would like to renew the motions from Representative Loon and Representative Mariani that House Files 831 and 843 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or for further action at a later time. Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, the committee is adjourned.